If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
I got stuff for you.
Holy moly.
I need to get some snakes and release them around my house.
But they love eating people. They love eating kids.
These guys are the scientists of the supernatural, lecturers leaving lessons for inquiring laymen. They are applying the scientific method to a world that baffles science. They are the cryptids of the corn.
Every day that you open your mouth,
I know, right?
I'm more convinced that you're abducted by aliens.
No.
And it just stood up. I mean, it just like kept going and going. And she goes, what the?
These are idiots.
I was laughing reading this because I already knew how you would feel.
Idiot. What part of the story fits your balloon?
Well,
this isn't a UFO. Yeah.
But who else has big black wings and red eyes?
Batman.
Well, Mothman.
Oh, yeah, Mothman.
Well, everyone, I think we know exactly what it is. So say it all with me. It was the Sandhill Crane.
Would you try it?
No.
You wouldn't eat it?
No.
Why?
Because they're probably toxic.
There'd be a lot of poop in my pants. Seeing a 6-foot alligator go swinging through the air and slam into a tree.
Hey, welcome back to Friends of One Podcast. I'm the great and powerful Mr. E.
I'm J Clone 22.
And today we're going to do, on Facebook, I asked, by the time this comes out, like 2 weeks ago, which you can still add your suggestions to, a Facebook post asking for listener suggestions. A listener commented something that is probably true, saying they felt like they haven't been nearly as researched lately. And for anybody personally at home, I'll let you know a little bit. We've been really, really busy this winter. And
yeah.
I've had some problems. Mostly the brand new truck I bought, like, it blew up in the first month I had it.
The engine.
Yeah.
But you just got good news today.
Yes. So it's, you know, coming out of the funk, and then three kids, and then it's just, Emily's working a lot because we're getting ready to move out to the property. So we have to, we'll have two sets of bills for a minute.
Be a lot of moving parts.
Yes. So, the next couple weeks, I have some pretty research heavy, including one that you guys have asked for a bunch, and I don't know why we never redid it. It's one of the lost episodes of Cryptids of the Corn. It is the Beast of Jevudan.
So that's coming in the near future, you're saying?
Yes.
Okay.
And I found something that I'm not sure I've ever heard anybody else talk about. Ooh. So I haven't done one of those in a while. And I put in a lot of work.
Foreshadowing.
So the story will only be like half of it. I have a lot of things for the Beast of Jevudan. But coming back to this is the Yellowstone Mysteries. Daphne, Canadian listener, longtime friend and fan and, you know, Patreon, all of that.
Oh, yeah.
She's done art for us for, like, the Arkansas Giant Killer Centipede.
Sent us Christmas cards.
She always sends us Christmas cards, or like, whether they're mailed or digital. And
probably our favorite furry listener.
She is. She's only... No, that's not true. She's the only... One of the only furries we know that is an actual furry that listens.
I know. That's the only reason
she's
I got can
a pretty,
say that.
I mean, she's got a pretty cool costume. Cole Paul.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm like, it's. I know it's green and black.
Yeah, green and black.
Like neon green. I like that shade. But yeah, and we did furry... I think we did Furry Fight Club on Patreon.
Oh, gosh, yeah.
And she said the furry community found that very funny.
All right.
Yeah. But anyways, she suggested... Yes, more like Zone of Death... missing 411, some of those cases. And we've done a lot of missing 411. And I'll tell you, when you're researching this, and I highly advise, you don't just take our word for anything.
Oh, no, right.
And
we don't know nothing.
We are opinionated because we're humans. And every human, whether they tell you or not, is flawed and opinionated. I don't know of any true human, because it's in our nature, right?
I think so.
100% unbiased. You know, we have people that I think are pretty close, but I think
Jesus was.
Well, yeah. Wasn't quite human.
Oh.
Had a human body.
Ah.
Anyways, so when you start researching, there are so many, like, I don't know if cover-ups, I don't want to go that conspiratorial quite yet this early, but when you, like, I knew disappearances in Yellowstone, for example. I've known of deaths in Yellowstone. Like, actual people that have, like, I didn't know them, but I have friends in the National Park Service. And,
yeah.
And you can't even look up their full names and find those stories.
Hmm. Where they're just buried or what?
Yes. I can't tell if they're scrubbed. And it could be not as in, like, there's dogmen out there eating people.
No, yeah.
I think it's because there's so much revenue. We talked about this early season one or two, I think.
With the park industry or camping industry?
Yeah. That too many bad stories can soil the punch bowl. And attendance goes down. I mean, we're talking Yellowstone has like 4 or 5 million visitors a year.
Yeah, that's a lot. So what you're saying is reporting on all the rate in which they're actually happening might scare some people off from doing that.
Yeah, so I think some stuff is, and I'm not saying like a dog man's eating every person that goes out there or there's a time portal sucking up every person that goes missing. But here in Ohio, and I'm having so much trouble finding research on this.
Mm-hmm.
A girl just went missing in Wayne National Forest like 2 weeks ago as of recording this. So this comes out like 4 weeks ago. Just went missing. I can find virtually nothing on her. They arrested somebody and then released somebody, the same person. They never released their name.
Hmm.
And they're not from the area. Like, so I said it for years that I think Wayne National Forest may have some serial killer activity in it. Whether it's a dumping ground or just there's just sick people and you can run around. So Wayne National is so different compared to other national parks.
Okay. And Wayne National is in southeastern Ohio,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. So it's Salt Fork sits on top of it and Hocking sits like below it ish. And Zaleski, a lot of people like Zaleski here in Ohio, is in the middle of it.
So this is basically like the entrance to the foothills of the Appalachians.
Yeah. And it is probably the largest. Least broken up stretch of woods in the Midwest.
Okay. Yeah, because all of ours, at least where we're from,
the true clear, Midwest, I mean,
clear cut.
When you get up to like north and stuff, like Michigan has bigger ones, like Manistee National and stuff, like there are just giant swaths of pine.
But you go through Ohio and Indiana, Illinois, it's all gone.
Yeah. Where the southern and northern parts have still forested areas, but the middle has all been farmed. So like they're presuming dead. And there's accidents happening in Wayne National where there's so many mine shafts that aren't marked. And I'm telling you, I found them. I found mine shafts that are like a person wide.
And that's it.
That's it. And you step wrong and you whoop.
Slip
and
right
you
down.
Fall 400 feet.
That's wild. That would be scary.
I mean, and then you hit you hit coal or you pray you hit a rock. You don't hit water down there because it's going to be a long time of just, they can't get you out.
Yeah.
They cannot. Like, that's why I like being fat is like, Emily may slip through that hole, but.
Not me.
Old Mr. E ain't fitting in there. You're going to need a real cave.
You've been training for this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just sit there with my legs dangling.
It's for safety, guys.
Mm-hmm. The muffin top holding me up.
Gosh.
So Yellowstone is like the national park in the U.S. Like when you think of national parks in the world, it's synonymous. Like I can't tell you how many international listeners we have and friends. I have a bunch of biology friends that are international and they're always asking why I don't go out to Yellowstone. And I'm like, well, the country's massive. First off, Yellowstone's like,
it's not close.
What? 14, 15 hour drive.
At least.
Yeah. I mean, it's the other side of the country.
Yeah. I mean, that's at the minimum for us.
It probably is longer. You're probably right. It's probably 20 hours.
Well, I know it's about 30 hours to Las Vegas from here.
Yeah, so it may even be like longer than I thought. But
yeah,
so it's huge, and the United States are huge. And if you look, I highly advise.
We have the biggest parks, the best parks.
I highly advise you look up the population density map of the U.S.
Yeah, yeah.
It's not nearly as extreme like Australia. We talk about Australia a lot on this podcast because it's so fascinating. We have a lot of listeners in Australia.
Where everyone lives on the coast.
Yeah. But we have giant swaths of nobody and nothing.
Yeah, it's called Wyoming.
Yeah, where I think Yellowstone touches Wyoming.
Yeah, it does.
Yeah. Like Wyoming, Idaho, Montana.
North and South Dakota, right? Is it all the way over there?
I don't know if it touches the Dakotas. I know there's another park that touches the Dakotas.
Yeah.
It may be like how Wayne National and like Salt Fork State Forest are here.
Yeah.
Like they technically, yes, you could walk there on park land, but no, it's a different thing. Like the state level versus federal.
Either way, it's up there and it's big, huge. Like we said earlier.
But we have high population densities and even like Hocking Hills, you can go there and walk and there's 500 people like at Old Man's Cave or like, or Conkle's Hollow and stuff like that. And then you go just a little bit, like maybe 3-4 miles outside the park into Wayne National Park. And you can pull over. There's a lot of spots. There's rules and all that stuff, so don't get in trouble. But you can walk all day and see nobody.
Yeah.
Like, we used to go back there and fish this little place called Frog Pond. And it just had bluegill in it. It was just fun because it was, like, on top of a mountain back there.
Yeah, it's just a nice place to go to.
Yeah, it was relaxing. But we walked probably 2 hours to get there and 2 hours to get back.
It's worth it.
Yeah, and it was just fun. We'd just get up there and...
Who wouldn't want to go to Frog Pond?
So Yellowstone has a lot of mysteries, everything from Bigfoot to portals to time slips to a lot of disappearances that you can't really find anything on. And please, people, if you have more information than I have, please send it in.
Oh, yeah.
But the first thing we're going to talk about is the Zone of Death, which I thought was a joke.
Okay.
There's a lack in my knowledge. Daphne specifically suggested this part, and I haven't watched it, but the Dutton Ranch TV show.
I don't know if I know what that is.
Gosh, now we're going to get yelled at because it's extremely popular right now.
Dutton Ranch?
That's the people, but it's...
that live there.
Yeah. Okay. They're right on the edge of Yellowstone, and they're always having a problem with Yellowstone wolves and stuff like that.
Oh, okay. I don't watch TV.
But they're used in the show a lot. They use the Zone of Death. So the Zone of Death is 50-square-mile area in Idaho's section of Yellowstone National Park, in which results in the Vince Age Clause in the Constitution of the United States. That a person may be able to theoretically avoid conviction for most major crimes, including and not limited to murder.
Wow. So it's like international waters.
I've seen videos of like lawyers going over this and arguing and like of the actual like legal.
Right. Ramifications behind it.
And there's another one in Texas, I believe. It's called like No Man's Land. It's a much smaller. It's not 50 square miles. Yeah. 50 square miles is size of like a small state.
It's pretty big.
Not a small state.
Well, maybe Rhode Island.
I mean, yeah, some of those east, but I mean, like a lot of people can live in 50 square miles.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So a person may be able to commit murder. How many people do you think go out there just to do like, here's one for one of our specific listeners, go out there to do tax fraud? And like, I did all my crimes out there. Right. Good luck.
I don't know, but that's smart. That's a good idea. What if you file your taxes wrong there?
I think
you submit them from there.
I think the problem with that is you'd have to do all of the crimes there as well.
Dang it.
The United States District Court of the District of Wyoming is currently the only United States District Court to have to do jurisdiction. Man, I can't read today. Over parts of multiple states. Only one.
Huh.
By reason of jurisdiction, including the Yellowstone National Park, which extends slightly beyond the Wyoming's borders into Idaho and Montana. In this regard, the federal government has exclusive jurisdiction over the park, so crimes committed on the park cannot be prosecuted under any state laws.
So it's its own, like, law, basically.
Yeah, it's under federal law.
Now, is that just the whole park, or is that just the Valley of Death. What'd you call it?
The Zone of Death.
The Zone of Death.
So that's the park. So we're getting to the loophole here.
Okay.
So the park itself is the only, like, one of the only places in the U.S. to have its own triple state, like, circuit court.
Yeah.
Trials in the district court, sorry, not circuit court, district court. Trials in the court are normally held in the federal courthouse in Cheyenne, Wyoming. However, the Sixth Amendment of the United States Constitution decrees that the accused shall enjoy the right to a speedy and public trial and by an impartial jury of the state and district within the crime shall have been committed.
Okay.
So, real carefully, remember, it's all about semantics.
Right, wordplay.
The jury of the state and the district.
So both of them.
Nobody lives there.
Right, technically, right. It's a national public park.
Yeah. Because of this, charges for criminal allegations have been committed in the area in this park in Idaho, have been tried before a jury consisting entirely of residents of the area. Since the Idaho portion of the park is uninhabited, the jury of the residents of both the state and the district could not be employed. There's nobody there in the Idaho section. Nobody lives there.
Okay.
So you can't get a jury. So under the Sixth Amendment, you legally have to have a jury to be charged of a federal crime.
Right.
You have that right.
Right.
Of people in the area and district you committed that crime.
Right. That makes sense. I'm following.
I'm just saying, this is like, yeah, this is where it gets like the loopholes, you know, right, fighting. Right. But there's nobody lives there. So what are you going to do?
So you can't have a jury.
Yeah.
Means you can't commit a crime.
As the Constitution guarantees the right to a jury trial, which is specific in three separate times, Article 3, Section 2, Sixth Amendment, Seventh Amendment, the defendant facing any felony or misdemeanor even charged will be unable to receive their constitutional trial and therefore cannot legally be punished regardless of their guilt or innocence.
Aha. Uh-huh. So there is one way around this for the government, to be on the government side.
Is just shoot him?
Well, I mean, I guess that's the other way. I guess there's two ways. But the one, this guy could declare you a terrorist. Then it doesn't matter where you are, where you committed the crime. As long as they call you a terrorist, domestic terrorist, eco-terrorist, it doesn't matter.
There is a lot of that in the Yellowstone.
As long as you get that moniker labeled over you, they can arrest you and you have no right to speedy trial or nothing.
So the constitutional loophole is an area in which was discovered by Michigan State University lawyer and professor Brian C. Clark.
Hmm.
Or Colt. Clarked. I can't say his last name. We're just going to go with Brian. While he was planning to write an essay about the technicalities of the Sixth Amendment. So he's doing this for college, and he's like, I'm going to write an essay or whatever, which entitles criminals to defendants to a fair and or quick trial. He would then, about a hypothetical place where it's not enough eligible citizens for a jury, and theorized there could be no trial and therefore no punishment for major crimes in the area. He later realized that this place actually existed.
Huh.
So you're kind of like theoretically created. He's like, if this kind of thing exists, you couldn't charge somebody there.
Right.
Because of how everything is written.
Right.
And then somebody else is like, I think that exists. Like, by definition. The essay is which called The Perfect Crime, was published in 2005, the Georgetown Lawyer or Law Journal. He feared that criminals might read this essay and commit crimes in the zone before the loophole was fixed.
Mm.
He's like, poopy. He published it and he's like,
but still, there
everybody's just going to drag people out there and murder people.
I was going to say, there still needs to be people there to commit a crime.
Let's say you drag a person you do not like out there to kill him.
Yeah, yeah.
You're only going to get charged with human trafficking because you brought a person there against their will.
Right, yeah.
Not the murder that happened in the zone.
Right, yeah.
We know from, at least here in Ohio, human trafficking sometimes doesn't get you anything.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's true.
So that's how, like, I could see that. Or you go out there and, like, making meth, I'm sure, is a whole big different crime than, like, selling meth.
Oh, I bet. Yeah, I bet you it is. Yeah, and I bet you it's like Breaking Bad, basically.
Yeah, so
driving the
RV out there.
In their underwear, yeah.
So you could do that and you get charged with the lesser crime of, like, leaving the area with it.
Huh.
Popular discussion often alleges the crime is legal in this zone, although he clarified that the problem instead represents the reason why it might be harder to prosecute somebody for it successfully rather than it being legal.
Okay.
So that's another semantic. Is yes, legally, it is illegal to commit the crime still there.
Right.
It's just processing or prosecuting somebody is going to be the difficult part.
So, you might as...
So, that basically is just saying that's a semantic. Is crime is not legal there.
Correct.
Though, when they catch you, they're going to have a lot of trouble prosecuting you.
Prosecuting a crime is difficult.
Yes. So, they're going to hold you for a while in a big fish tank. But you have a right to a speedy trial. But what does that mean?
It means that they can't hold you there forever, and it means that...
But speedy by who? A Greenland shark? A bowhead whale? Oh,
by a jury. You need a jury there, and there's no...
Where does it say humans in the Constitution?
Oh, well.
What does speedy mean?
Fast.
Yeah, for a fruit fly, that's, 30 minutes.
Ooh, no, that's long for a fruit fly.
That's what I'm saying, is you got 30...
Like 3 seconds.
And then for a bowhead whale or a Greenland shark, it's 2-3 decades.
Yeah, I think all the Constitution, though, implies humans behind it.
And implications are not legal. But yeah, anyways, the minor crimes committed in this zone do not require jury trial and are subject to prosecution. So if you get like a misdemeanor or anything there that does not need a trial, they're going to get you.
Okay.
They're going to get you.
So it's the big stuff.
Yeah. In addition, a felony committed in this zone could still potentially be subject to civil litigation. The criminal could also be prosecuted on conspiracy charges related to planning a crime and traveling to the zone.
Mm.
So that's kind of what you mentioned, is like that terrorist label.
Yeah.
Like if you have plans, like actual plans to go there and murder or make meth or, brew moonsh, like any of that stuff, or cut down the forest.
Avoid taxes.
Yeah. Like if they can prove that, the conspiracy to commit the crime.
Yeah.
You're also going to be prosecuted.
Yeah. The man. Always on your back.
Yeah.
Just waiting for you to slip up so we can get you. I don't know. Just had to let that out a little bit because it's true.
So, yeah. So, after Brian discovered this loophole, he worked to have Congress close it. He's like, guys, this is like, now that I accidentally released this essay out.
Yeah, we got to fix it.
This could be bad quick.
Yeah.
Like, because there are going to be people going out there to shoot their ex-wives and stuff like that, like. I don't got to pay alimony. She's dead.
Yeah, convict me.
Yeah.
Prosecute me. I dare you.
He suggested that lawmakers in Wyoming that the zone of death be included as part of the federal district court for the District of Idaho, instead the Wyoming district, which would fix the issue.
Okay.
Because then there's people that live there.
Okay. At least it would fix the issue of...
Finding a jury.
Yes.
Because once again, crime's not legal there. That's the misnomer.
Yeah.
Prosecution is difficult.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I've heard people say it's like legal. Like,
There's no one there to prosecute you for doing these crimes, but...
Congress ignored him. They just are like, no, it's fine.
So they want it.
In 2007, author C.J. Box wrote a novel called Free Fire that featured the zone, which Box hoped would increase governmental awareness about this.
Okay.
So he's purposely like making like a mockumentary book about like what could happen out there.
Okay.
The novel did succeed in altering Wyoming Senators Mike Eretz to the issue, but Eretz was unable to convince Congress to discuss it.
Okay.
So the book did work with their local like governor.
It got him in there, but the rest of the federal.
Senator.
Okay.
And then it was, then the Congress still like, no, that's a lot of work.
Yeah, the Senate.
That's a lot of work.
We have...
It's vacation time.
Yes, and we have to protect, we have other people to protect right now.
Although missing people or person cases have attracted some media attention in this area, no known felonies have ever been committed in the zone of death since the discovery in 2026, sorry.
No known.
But there's a lot of missing people. This is one of those areas that has a higher than average amount of missing people. And it does not get reported very easily.
That's, like I said, emphasizing no known deaths.
A lot of people go there and never come out.
So they're not dead.
It's like a retirement village back there.
Yeah. I'm sure it is.
In December 2005, a poacher named Michael illegally shot an elk in Montana section of Yellowstone. He cited Brian's paper, The Perfect Crime, to explain why he believed it was illegal to have him in trial. Because a jury of the state, other than the crime he committed in, was not constitutionally legal.
Okay.
He just walked up there. He just seen an elk and he's like, boom, shot it. And then he freely admitted to the AI shot it. You can't prosecute me.
Right. Yeah.
The court dismissed this argument. He took a plea deal, which waived his right to a jury trial and prohibited him from appealing the zone of death issue to the 10th Circuit Court regarding of his missed moot, at least for the time being.
Okay.
So, yeah, basically, they just said that, no, we don't want to listen to that.
Okay.
We're going to prosecute you here.
They're just bypassing it. Because
it's the federal government.
They're like, we don't care.
It's like when Atlas tries to argue with me.
And you just realize, like,
wait. I can just pick you up.
Yeah, I'm the adult. Yeah. I can do whatever I want in this house.
He did that. He's like, no, at the auction. And I'm like, all right. I picked him up and carried him to the car. Screaming and kicking the whole time.
Yeah.
Like,
you had a choice.
I am bigger.
You chose wrong.
Yeah, so that's the zone of death.
So the zone of death isn't technically like you walk in there and you die.
No. Remember we did Patreon, though. I always thought it was the zone of silence in Mexico.
Yeah. Yeah.
Where the tortoise research station is, the only tortoise research station in Mexico.
Yeah, in the zone of silence.
In the middle of the zone of silence where everything disappears.
Yeah.
And random white man in fancy suits walk out and talk to Mexican farmers.
I guess it is similar to that, yeah.
Yeah, but people still go here. Like, right, it's not like it's in the middle. Like, remember with the zone of silence, it's like radio signals, all that stops.
Stops, yeah.
And then there's like just a couple tiny towns on the edge.
Yeah.
Because it's a horrible desert.
So it's not a paranormal zone of death. It's just
a legal, like, weird thing.
Just a legal name, yeah. Mm-hmm. Huh.
But yeah, so there's that.
That's pretty neat. No, I didn't know that before. But I mean, I don't know. Just with national parks in general and people going missing and then all the weird rules accompanied by national parks, and we've already discussed it before in the past with the UN having their connection and their fingers in all of our national parks as well. And then,
which I do want to do a whole episode on the UN's. So for anybody that doesn't know, we've said that a lot. And basically, yes, no. It's one of those things. It's kind of like this.
Yeah.
It's a yes, no thing. No, the UN does not have absolute control over the U.S. National Park Service. The U.S. National Parks are part of like the heritage sites of the world, the World Heritage Sites. So they can have a say and help in like operations and preservations.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the legal mumbo jumbo of that kind of like, I mean, that's a watered down. I'm not a legal expert by any means.
But it just gets weird when you go to like to these national forests or parks and in the middle of them.
UN vans.
Yeah. There's just unmarked white UN vans in the middle of them in like in a parking lot in the middle of nothing, nowhere. It's just weird.
And a man's walking a 12-foot tall dog.
Well, I don't know about that.
Looks like a, Reagan.
I'm going to stick to what we know has been seen.
All right, ready for the next thing?
Yeah, do we, before we jump into the next one, if I was, lost in the middle of the national forest or national park or whatever, Yellowstone, and I was that guy that shot that elk, you know what I would do? Mm. Before they tried me on trial, I would have cut it up, quartered it, and sliced up and cooked it over the fire with some Flavors of the Forest Bigfoot breath. You can find it at flavorsforest.com/corn and get you the best garlic dust. Basically, a garlic freeze-dried garlic powder you can put on your food, and it is the best, highest quality garlic powder on the market today. That's Bigfoot breath. You can find it at flavorsforest.com/corn.
The elk thing made me think of this. Do you remember that poacher that one of the worst poaching cases in the U.S. got caught
here in Ohio?
Yeah.
Yes.
He had like 3 or 4 elk from Yellowstone.
Oh my gosh. I don't know if we ever discussed that on the main show.
We probably haven't because it's still pending. And I will do a full episode on him once he's convicted.
Yep. More foreshadowing.
Because my family's ran into a bunch on their land.
Oh yeah. He's local to us.
But I mean, he does it to everywhere. But he just lives here.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah.
But he does it, I mean, if he had animals from Florida and Yellowstone and, poaching.
Wild.
All right, so we're going to talk about Bob Action Johnson's Bigfoot encounter in Yellowstone National Park.
Bob Action Johnson.
Mm-hmm. Jackson, sorry.
Oh, Bob Jackson Johnson. Wait, Bob Jackson?
No. Bob Action Jackson.
Oh, okay, that's better.
My dyslexic brain doesn't like how close those words are to each other.
Bob Action Jackson.
Action Jackson.
That's what we called. That was a nickname for one of our friends back in high school for football.
Bob Action Jackson?
Not Bob, just Action Jackson. Oh. His last name was Jackson.
In the late 1970s and early 1980s, Yellowstone National Park's vast wilderness was a stage for numerous mysterious wildlife encounters. So it ain't just the zone of death you got to worry about. There's not just Bigfoot and other things. There's monsters and staircases and portals and
Bob Jackson.
And Bob Jackson's out there wrestling it.
Yeah.
Among the rangers who patrolled these remote areas was Bob Action Jackson. Nice. Almost always known by friends and even longtime park fans as Action Jackson.
All right.
So he's kind of like a celebrity. Like,
yeah.
People would kind of go out like how some people do for like Bigfoot and Hocking Hills.
Right.
Like, you kind of know he's out here somewhere. And so when you've seen him, like, that was really cool. His reputation for enforcing park regulations was legendary, earning his admiration from park supporters and notoriety from scofflaws and outfitters. Jackson, who retired in 2004, was one of the few who knew Yellowstone's backstory immediately. It was during these years Jackson experienced a series of events that would leave him questioning the known wildlife of Yellowstone. This is a guy, right? So we talk about Bigfoot and other strange cryptid sightings. And one thing I don't like that a lot of people do, specifically law enforcement or government agencies or anything like that, what do they first thing they do is they kind of like discredit the person.
When it comes to Bigfoot or something strange, cryptid related?
No. So like when it's a park ranger or a cop or a pilot, you know, we look at it a little, not, how do I say this? People look at it a little more seriously.
Yeah.
Because they are risking / losing respect and sometimes jobs.
Yeah.
Over them saying, I seen a Bigfoot. I seen a dog, man. Their UFO flew over. I don't know what it was, but.
Can affect their livelihood, yes. Their income. Yeah.
When like me or you, you know, they just pick on us at the bowling alley. Right. That's all it is.
Gosh. It's still just some people.
No, you know, but.
They're just not different. Wise. Yeah, it's different.
So one day while riding up Fan Creek in Yellowstone's northwest corner, with an outfitter, Jackson heard an unusual, haunting sound. It was a continuous noise that filled the entire valley, resembling the cries of a thousand elk in distress, as he would call it.
Mm.
So it was one of these sounds, and I mean, obviously, you know, it's 1970-something. There's no recording of it. He was backpacking with an outfitter.
Yeah, but that sounds frightening.
And this is a guy that's been out there for decades.
Yeah.
Knows every wildlife out there. Has run in with, you know, big bears and wolves and, you know, mountain lion and elk.
1,000 distressed elks.
1,000.
That's a lot.
Well, it's like, what I imagine is the whole valley is vibrating. Like, that sound.
Because one sound of elk is scary enough.
Very scary.
If you don't know what it is.
Like, loons and elk, I think, are the scariest sounding North American animals.
Loons?
Yeah.
I guess if you don't know what it is.
Not their, like, little whippoorwill call.
Yeah.
But they're a big, like, screech they do early morning.
Okay, yeah.
Will scare the bejesus. If you don't know, that's a loon.
Yeah, exactly. If you don't know.
And it's foggy on the lake, and you see a big splash, and you're like, you're like, oh, a dragon's coming to eat me. That's just what's happening.
A dragon.
Well, you don't know.
No, you're right.
But yeah, so I imagine just everything's vibrating with sound.
Okay.
Now, does that sound like anything?
I mean, Bigfoot, emperor sound.
There you go.
Okay.
So, and I don't have proof of that, but that's kind of when he describes the sound. That's kind of what I picture.
You better credit anyone that, you know, you may have taken that idea from.
Oh, yeah. Where it sounds so loud that it's because it's actually vibrating the bones in our body and like the fluid in your eyes and stuff like that. So it may not actually be as high as a decibel as it feels it is.
Right.
When the frequency is what's bugging you.
Because there's different theories about that, shaking that fluid in your eye, and there's vitreous fluid in your eyes, and there's aqueous fluid in your eyes. And one of them's like a gel, one of them's actually fluid and liquid. So you don't want to mix the two up when you're trying to explain that when it's your own theory. It's important.
It was a continuous noise that filled the whole valley. You know, it sounds like 1,000 elk in distress. This was unlike anything Jackson had ever heard in his extensive time in the wild. A couple weeks later, while coming out of the Sportsman's Creek, Jackson had another eerie encounter. His horse, highly agitated, signaled the presence of something unusual. So his horse is just as trained as he is. You know, this is a backpacking horse. This is, you know, a mountain riding horse. This is one of those animals that is highly, highly trained, and you respect it just as much as you, as it respects you.
Gotcha.
Like, it's a tool. And when we talked about Teddy Roosevelt's encounter, they either talked about the horses too, and even the Gimlin Patterson or the Patterson Gimlin film.
It got all riled up.
The horse got all riled up,
yeah,
and it was in plain day.
Yep.
So. You listen, like we always make the joke, listen to dogs or, you know, trust dogs.
Trust dogs, yeah.
But animals know. Like when I've shared my shadow person encounter, that like the snakes and the fish and the lizards are all going nuts before I seen that thing.
Yeah.
So they know that something's not right.
They know if you know how to read animals.
Yeah.
I think that's the trick, is having a relationship with them to know how to understand them.
His horse, highly agitated, signaled there was a presence of something unusual. Peering down a steep side hill, Jackson spotted a deer bolting through the meadow, followed by an extremely large, black, bipedal creature with arms that were too long.
Okay.
So it's down the steep embankment. There's a white tail just booking it for its life. And he sees this giant, hulking, bipedal creature with long, swinging arms.
In pursuit.
Mm-hmm. The creature, which Jackson initially mistook as some kind of bear, moved extremely intelligently, as he would put it. Using its the thickets for cover as it tried to evade him after it's seen Jackson.
Huh, okay.
So once it's seen he was being watched, it's still got to move across this opening and it's trying to get the most of its body covered as it can. It wasn't running in a straight line like a bear would either. Instead, it appeared to be deliberately seeking protection as it fled, which struck Jackson as highly unusual. The sighting left him profound, and this impression would last forever on him. He had encountered countless bears during his thousands and thousands of miles of horsebacking through Yellowstone's backcountry, but whatever this was completely different. The proportions, the movement, and the intelligence of the creature did not match any animal he had ever seen. Intrigued and disturbed, Jackson began to ask others about their experiences. He got bit by the bug.
Right.
We talked about this with Bigfoot. You like either turn into it or you run away from it.
Okay.
And a lot of people do one and then the other.
Fight or flight.
Like I won't mention his last name, but our good friend Greg was like that. And was like, because that's how I was.
Yeah.
You know, it's just you turn away from it. I didn't see it. It's not real. And because somebody just talked to me this weekend about, well, how come more people don't have paranormal encounters? I think people do. I think a lot of people do. And you just choose to ignore it because it's harder for your brain to accept the unacceptable than to just write it off as I miss seen.
And it's not like just something you bring up to someone unless you're already kind of talking about it, you know?
Unless you're hammered at a bowling alley and you walk over to somebody.
Or there's that part too. But either way, it's not normal conversation where it just gets brought up.
But during this, his research, he discovered that several other park visitors and, interestingly, outfitters had heard similar sounds and even seen strange, unexplained footprints in the park. One illegal camper in the northeast section of Yellowstone described the noise that startled him around 20 yards from his campsite. Another outfitter recorded hearing the same mysterious sound in the early 1980s. In one particularly chilling account, the crew examining blister rust, in the 1970s stumbled upon a deboned elk.
Okay.
So you come up, and there's an elk without bones.
Like a carcass with no bones.
Mm-hmm. What do you think?
Well, I would, me personally, I'd be like cattle mutilation or, you know, type stuff.
As they looked around, they found extremely large footprints near Montana Creek.
Okay.
Now, what do you think?
Well, obviously.
I know you think, but I'm saying if you just walked up on this,
you're
out looking for mushrooms, right? And you find an elk, it's not turned inside out. It's not turned inside out, but it's deboned.
Just deboned. I don't know.
I'd probably, a 900-pound elk deboned is scary.
A person, like a human, did it.
Yeah, I'd think poacher, and I'd be equally scared of that.
Oh, yeah, because, no, if they're out there doing that, I mean...
They will kill you.
If you're by yourself, especially.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm saying they would.
Not every poacher, but especially, like, high game. So a lot of people, for elk, for example, kill elk specifically to resell illegally.
Okay.
So that's a protected species harvesting, like, trade.
So anyone willing to go through that, probably...
They will kill you.
Yeah.
I'm not saying the raccoon or the deer poacher locally near you is going to shoot you, but... A guy that makes his living off of illegally killing elk, and he's been doing it for 20 years, and it's been a secret still. You're not leaving that woods. One of you's not.
Yeah, one of you.
The crew then, frightened by the strange noises they heard, quickly left the area. Jackson himself saw several large footprints while skiing into Heart Lake. On the fair, an area known for its extremely deep snow and its remoteness. So something in this area that just holds a lot of snow was stepping and walking through it like it was nothing.
Okay.
He's like, I don't know if I could walk through that.
Hmm.
And whatever this is just walking through. The tracks, he said, were enormous and stretched extremely far apart, unlike any human or bear prints he'd ever seen. Another significant incident occurred in the early to mid-1980s near Eagle Creek Pass. As Jackson and his team approached the Hallway Creek cabin just before dark, they heard the now familiar mechanical rhythmic noise. Jackson timed it at 26 seconds, coming from about 3 to 400 yards behind the cabin. Despite investigating the next day, they found no footprints or any other evidence of any large creature's presence. Yet the sound was so distinct and unlike any known animal, it was left an incredible mark on his memory. So one of the things they're going in and just doing cabin checks, and they do this a lot. A lot of these big parks, like because there was, this was several years back, probably 8 or 9 years. A girl went missing for like 8 weeks.
Okay.
And was literally in the winter and ended up in one of these. And that just like, she had enough food for like 7 weeks.
Yeah.
So the last week she was just laying in the bed starving to death.
Yeah.
And then they found her.
Well, that's fortunate.
Yeah, like super sick. And if I remember, I'll try to find it, link that story.
Because we covered that one story of that lady that did that, but she was just hiding out pretending she was missing.
Yeah. But so they go and check these and they make sure they're in working order because there's, like, for example, I have buddies that walk the Appalachian Trail and they call them teepees, but they're like a three-sided wooden thing that you just lay in a sleeping bag.
Yeah.
It's for like heavy storms. They're really strong built. They're not greatly comfortable, but it's for people walking the Appalachian Trail that they can get in and be safe.
Get through a night, yeah.
We think we covered a Bigfoot story about one of those, where it grabbed his foot.
Can't remember.
Or maybe that was told me. I don't remember. Been doing this a while. In all of his years as a ranger, Jackson never publicly spoke about these encounters until recently. His stories paint a picture of a mysterious presence in the Yellowstone's backcountry. Their presence does not fit into any known categories of wildlife. These encounters, along with similar reports and other weirdness, suggest that there may or may not be Yellowstone's wild man out there.
Ooh.
So, yeah. But, yeah, so that's Action Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
Then I guess I got time for one more. Well, I got a whole myriad.
We've seen I know you've seen it, but I'm sure anyone listening that's into Bigfoot and watched the videos and stuff has seen that video from Yellowstone National Park where it's like the four of them. There's four in the background.
I 100% believe that's fake.
You think so?
Yeah.
How so? Just AI?
No, I think it was edited in. I think it was clipped and made, as that was a long time ago that came out.
Yeah, it's old.
But my big thing is there was bison even close to him, and the bison just did not care.
Yeah.
And it was out in the open, and there's a bunch of people. Like, that hot spring specifically is in an area with, like, a boardwalk.
Okay.
So everything we know about Bigfoot is there going to be four of them walking in broad daylight where a bunch of people, they can hear and smell and even probably see.
I mean, I don't know.
But no, I mean, it's like the same reason when that train thing popped up where that Bigfoot standing on the hill with the train.
Now that one was 100% fake, yeah.
It was for that campground, that local campground.
Yeah.
But you know how they behave.
Yeah. I guess the only reason I could vouch for this one maybe is because the weather, that particular video was nuts and crazy, you know? So I don't think, I'd imagine there would be
any. It was just snowing.
Yeah, but snowing in the middle of where there's bison and whatnot, I don't know. It just looked pretty rough that for people to, if it was someone or people back there, you know what I mean? If it was faked, it'd have to be digitally edited in.
I think it was. I don't think it was people. Yeah. I don't think it was real people in costumes.
No, yeah.
I'm not saying that at all. I know.
I'm just saying if it was, yeah, but that'd be the only way. It'd have to be edited
and
in.
And that's from behaviors, right? That's where my first thing is like, I mean, every story that I've believed, that, or even video evidence I believe, like they don't just stand out there and let you look at them, especially a group of them, where there was little ones and big ones. And
yeah, I mean, I think we're talking about the same one. But
yeah, there's bison in a hot spring.
And then they're walking by in the background?
Yeah, in between pine trees.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know. I think Thinker Thunker did a breakdown of them too.
Ooh, I have to watch. I don't think I've seen that one.
I don't think the strides were right.
I'll have to check that then.
But I think they're walking like people.
Okay. Well, that would be the way to prove it.
Yeah. All right, so one more. We have, well, I mean, do you want to do one more or you want to talk about stuff?
I mean, just more missing or Yellowstone in general stuff? Like, what do you want to discuss?
We'll do a missing person. We'll do Austin King's story.
Ooh, okay.
And I try to find if he was ever found or not, because this is a couple years old. And so I can't find anything.
Recent?
Yeah.
Okay.
So if he's found, somebody please let me know, because I hope he is. But I have Whisper Lake, too. Which is a haunted UFO like thing in the bottom of Whisper Lake inside of Yellowstone. Shoots electricity and talks to people telepathically.
Oh wow, okay. That sounds normal.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, it sounds like a good thing to happen.
It's in one of the volcano lakes.
Oh, even better. So there's a volcano lake that shoots lightning out and whispers sweet nothings into your ear.
No, that's not sweet.
Okay.
It's always like, jump off the cliff.
Yeah, exactly.
Do it. Kill your mom. Like those things.
Yeah, that's terrible. Infrasound things.
I'm not even sure if it's that. I think it's just an old angry wizard at the bottom. But we've learned anything from this show. Wizards live in national park lakes.
Do they?
Yeah, remember Wizard Island and Ghost Ship Island?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Okay.
Which is from Crater Lake. Yeah. So the search launched for Yellowstone worker missing for 6 days in remote parts of the park. So a search and rescue effort, it was ongoing. This article came out September 23, 2024.
Okay.
And I really can't find if he was like really found or not. I'm not sure. So if anybody knows if he was found, please let me know. Anybody knows he wasn't found, please let me know. The search and rescue effort last week on a trip through the backcountry, Austin King, a 22-year-old concession worker at Yellowstone, was last heard from September 17th, and officers said he called friends and family from the summit of Eagle Peak. Standing at more than 11,300 feet, Eagle Peak is the highest point in the national park and is located in an extremely remote southeastern corner, several miles from the eastern shore of Yellowstone Lake. The National Park Service circulated a missing persons flyer for King, which includes two images of the hiker and described his features that could help identify him. According to the flyer, King is 6 feet tall, brown hair, hazel eyes. He wore a black shirt and gray pants and carried a dark-colored backpack when he disappeared. He also had some tattoos and big glasses. But yeah, the search and rescue team are looking for the 22-year-old. They're still like King vanished during his 7-day backpacking trip. A boat dropped him off on September 14th at Trace Point, along with the southeastern arm of the lake. The National Park Service said 2 days later, he spoke to the park ranger at Holloway Creek Cabin in the nearby backcountry, which was not hit on his intended route.
Okay, that's odd.
Before I go on, like when we go ice fishing and stuff, I always tell my dad, for example, I just shoot him a text, what lake we're on.
Right.
So they can find our corpses.
Basically.
I mean, that's the purpose. So then people aren't dying looking for us or... I mean, like, this place is huge. Our Michigan has 8,000 lakes. Like,
right, yeah. What lake are you going to be on?
What pond did we fall through on? Like,
yeah.
So changing the route is a bad idea. If you tell somebody, I'm taking this route, you stay on that route. So when people look for you,
they know they're going to
walk that route.
Yeah.
But yeah, so 2 days later, backcountry. At that time, King was planning to spend the night camp at the campsite in the area before climbing Eagle's Peak on Thursday or Tuesday. When King last made contact with anybody, he had reached the top of Eagle's Peak. He descended the fog, rain, sleet, hail, and windy conditions while on the summit, and according to the Park Service. So apparently it was awful weather when he was up there.
Okay.
Search operations began when King failed to show up for the boat pickup at the lake's northeastern shore on Friday. And on Saturday, the Park Service said more than 20 ground searchers, two helicopters, and unmanned air systems and search dog teams were focusing on the area in and around Eagle's Peak. The search team from Yellowstone and Grand Teton National Park, as well as Wyoming's Park County and Tenton counties, were casting a wider net as they looked for King in the areas around Eagle Pass Mountain Creek Trail, Eagle Creek Trailhead, and Shoshone National Forest. The National Park Service asked for the public's help as they noticed that anyone traveling through the backcountry near Eagle's Peak since September 14th could have seen King. People with information on his whereabouts should contact the Yellowstone Interagency Communications Center. So that's it. Like, I have a little bit more from his dad. Apparently, they may have found a note. This is horrible. And I really don't think they found him. I looked and looked and looked, and all the Austin King stuff was just about him missing.
Mm-hmm.
I really couldn't find anything about him being found.
Yeah.
My young man, Parks,
22.
Yeah. Out there. Like, this 2 years ago, as of, a year and a half ago. So dad of the Yellowstone worker who vanished, this is a month later, he says he shares an eerie note his son left on the mountain.
That's weird. Okay.
Now, I don't know. I've read this, and I don't know how I feel about this. As the search for the missing Yellowstone National Park employee Austin King continued, his father had shared a note left by his son in the area, which he said heard from nearly a month ago. So it's where he called his dad from.
Okay.
In the note, which was left at the registry directory entry at the top of Eagle's Peak, which is like a little box you can put stuff in.
Okay.
King 22 described the intense weather conditions he faced. According to the copy of the message, his dad shared with Cowboy State Daily News, the message was dated September 17th, which is the day he was last heard from.
Okay.
Here's what it says. I can't feel my fingers, and my glasses are so foggy from the ruthless weather on the mountain. I truly cannot believe I am here after what it took to be here. I endured rain, sleet, and hail, and most wind I've ever felt. I could not see Eagle for most of the day due to the most fog I'd ever seen in my life. I fear so only too many cliffs to get here and walk up a peak, or the connecting peak, a.k.a. not the right path, he continued. Life is so beautiful. Get out and live it. One of the last things he wrote is, it's basically, it's too cold and I can't feel my fingers anymore.
Hmm. Interesting. I don't know. Would you be writing all that stuff if you were like
so
fighting for your life?
He's real. He's a person that disappeared.
Yeah.
He's got a real family. His dad is still looking for him. I can find that. Like, there's active GoFundMes. Like, there's... So this station they're talking about is like a board. It's like you've seen him at like park entrances.
Oh, yeah, yeah. You like pin it up too or something. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So if he is like huddled behind that thing...
He could scrawl some kind of message like that.
Yeah, because his phone's not working anymore.
Yeah.
And he's got to try to walk down. That's talking about all the peaks.
Yeah.
Like he took the wrong path up.
Yeah.
So he had to like kind of peak hop. And it's so foggy, rainy, and icy. He's basically, in my opinion, wording it like, I'm going to have a lot of trouble trying to get off this mountain before I freeze to death.
Yeah.
And I wanted to let people know, you know, what's going on.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I could see it that way too.
So I added this because there's a lot of mysterious disappearances in national parks. But there's also a lot of natural phenomena, as in the cold, the weather. I think people can really think we are indestructible beings because we live very sheltered lives as modern humans, especially here in America.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm very thankful for our lives that we have. You know, it's so I think, and I've have plenty of friends that have done the Appalachian Trail. And the first bad time they've done it, you know, it changes their whole opinion on life. That one snowstorm
makes you feel vulnerable.
Or can kill you.
Yeah.
That's all it takes.
Yeah.
Is to get caught. You're 20 miles from shelter. It's getting foggy. It's sleeting. You don't have the body heat.
Right.
You got to walk down a mountain. You got to cross a river.
Yeah, that would suck.
Like, you know what I mean? Like,
what kind of crazy people do things like that?
Well, we're talking about a young dead man, I'm presuming.
I'm at our listeners right now.
We do have some. Robert, aiming at you, sending pictures from 8 feet of snow on the top of a mountain.
That's exactly who I'm targeting.
So I guess why I added this is I wanted to really highlight people looking for Austin.
Mm-hmm.
And that it does not have to be Dogman or the government capturing people.
Right, or aliens.
Or aliens or Bigfoot. Or you can fall down a hole. You can slip off a cliff. You get caught, like what appears to happen to Austin. You can get caught in a bad weather zone, and that's it.
Yeah, that'd be the end of it.
There's nothing you can do. I've done a lot, like especially with rivers and currents and stuff like that. I've been on basically giant pushes of floodings. And, I mean, when you got pulled to that culvert.
Oh, gosh, yeah, terrible. Scary.
When you feel...
The force of nature.
Yeah. I mean, and it's just how you can't do anything.
Yeah, here you.
And so I feel like nothing. With national parks, and this may be like we said, we're wrapping all the way back around to the beginning. Why they may be covering it up for non-paranormal reasons?
Yeah,
it's still the money. It's a big industry.
Yep.
And if you don't feel safe, you can't like you're not going to go.
Mm.
So I used Hocking Hills because it's one near us. But like Hocking Hills, when that lady got killed.
Mm.
That piece of wood, you know, two kids just kind of pushed it over and it hit her and killed her. She was like 24.
Be that.
And it's a cliff.
Like that vulnerable.
And people falling off of Old Man's Cave.
Yeah.
Like it's just there. Like you can just walk off it or slip or trip on a root and that's it.
And it's big. Like,
and you're going to fall 100 feet and hit a rock.
Exactly. Yeah.
And or like Wayne National, all the missing people in Wayne National. And I have problems with the tunnel theory, as in the mineshaft theory for Wayne National. But I'm telling you, I've walked past one that is not marked. Yeah. It has some plants or leaves over the top of it that Emily or you could just, and that'd be it.
Slip right into
it. And you'd be gone.
Yeah.
And that would be it. Like you'd fall 400 feet until you hit coal at the bottom.
Gosh, it sounds terrible.
And then get like a little bit of leaves and like a pitfall.
Yeah. I mean, that'd probably be one of the worst ways to go too.
So I think it's a little bit of everything. I think the national parks are used to hide whatever the paranormal is, whether that's Bigfoot, Dogman, for example. The U.S. Forestry Service put their their new house in Hocking on top of a ridge where the most Bigfoot sightings were in Hocking Hills.
That's weird, ain't it?
It's coincidence that they had to build it on stilts, and when there's a mile down the road, a bunch of flat ground they own.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll just put it right here.
I'm just saying,
here.
That's weird. I don't proof that they've done anything untoward, but that's weird.
We're coinkydink.
And then, you know, the UN and the stairs, which a lot of people don't believe, which is fine. And I think, I mean, it can even fall back on the Fae. And, you know, we talked a lot about that. It's been a long time. But where the Fae, I do believe, are tied to the health of the ecosystem. And whether they're the mushrooms or not, and they're like the spiritual or astral projections of mushrooms. So these are it, right? This is like when you talk about mycelial network mats that are highly developed and been around for some cases, like Bob, you know, 40,000 years or more.
Yeah.
Where there are these giant complex things that can probably force energy and perceive reality differently than we can. And they probably cause to our dismay paranormal events that we just can't perceive. Another episode we have coming up really soon is how our brains and eyes lie to us. And there's a lot in that about, I mean, I start very scientific and we get into the very paranormal at the end with just how that science and magic looking from the outside in is just, the only difference is understanding.
Yeah.
Watching orbs of light come out. I was just watching a plasma generator where it reacts with biology. And they have this where it'll create, what's those stones that have the spheres that people say is like an energy producer where it's all these twists and turns inside itself. I can't
stones.
Think of it.
Stones. Oh, like the ones they make?
Yeah.
Like the organite?
Yes, those things.
Orgone accumulators.
The donuts.
Okay. Yeah.
But it looks like that. And people pointed out that, you know, that it's the shape of this plasma thing that they are producing in a lab, in a fish tank, essentially. But when you interact with it, it takes that shape. It stops going, bouncing, going nuts.
Yeah.
And it starts spinning and it slows down. It gets really bright.
Huh.
Whether it's trying to, like, you know, we've talked a lot about plasmoids recently, whether it's trying to intelligently talk to you and sense you, and it just can't.
Yeah.
Because we're just so vastly different.
Yeah.
Or whether it's just reacting to your ions, you know, it's just reacting to your magnetic field.
Your presence.
Yeah. Like more like a shark versus, you know, a person where they can sense you even if you're behind a cloth or whatever.
Yeah. They know you're there, but.
So with all this being said, I think there's a lot of mysteries in the national parks. I think Yellowstone, especially Crater Lake, Wayne Nash, I think every one of them, the land between the lakes. And I 100% believe the government knows what's going on. Whether they're behind it or not is a different question.
Right.
But yes, I think there are some of these parks are built specifically like Helltown. It's specifically built to hold something like Hell. If anybody hasn't listened, that's a Patreon. That was an early Patreon episode, I believe, where this cult town, they all killed themselves and summoned something is the story. And
you're not allowed to go there.
Yeah. And so the U.S. bought it all up and put a big fence around it. And it's just out there.
Helltown, Ohio.
But I mean, what do you have any thoughts on national parks, Yellowstone, these stories? We'll do Whispering Lake too. Don't worry.
Well, you had mentioned, I thought of something that you mentioned, like the fungal networks, you know, projecting, you know, is that the Fae or whatnot? What if some of these national parks are just areas where maybe some of these fungal networks have developed, you know, specific to that area to develop these weird,
I guess that's what I was getting at,
psychological things.
It's the last place that they're still able to.
Yeah.
Or that they weren't destroyed with crops and plows and
concrete.
And concrete. Severing the networks.
You're right.
And it's very similar to like James Cameron's idea with Avatar, as in the tree mother isn't like a quote unquote god, but it's like a giant tree or fungus that inhabits the whole earth and is connected
to everything.
And that's why she doesn't like humans, is humans dig and mine metal, which severs her roots, which severs her connection.
Makes sense.
Well, it's like somebody, it would be like somebody digging into your brain.
Yeah.
You wouldn't enjoy it.
Probably not. Well,
until you get far enough that you like, I don't care.
Then you'd really enjoy it.
I don't know. Enjoy. I think. Have you ever seen lobotomy patients? I don't think they enjoy anything.
Oh, I guess you're right. Joy is kind of a big part of it.
They just don't complain.
Yeah. They stopped fighting back.
Yeah. But yeah. So thank you, Daphne, for the suggestion. We got some more interesting episodes coming out soon, like The Beast of Chevedon, and how our brains and eyes lie to us. And if you got any more suggestions, you can go to the Facebook page and comment below. We're going to try to get into more like research heavy episodes. It's just really difficult sometimes with three kids and
life. Hey, but we're chugging along.
It's happening. And if you guys, like I said, have suggestions, please reach out. We'd love to hear them. And I'm looking for, I have an idea for a season finale, but I'm looking still for a season finale topic. If you guys have any that you would like us to do, please let us know.
Dives.
I need something that's going to last like 10 or 12 hours, maybe 14.
Oh my gosh.
All right. I've been the Great and Powerful Mystery.
I've been J-Clone 22.
We'll catch you next week, guys. Bye. Bye.
Hey, guys. Thank you for listening to Crypt of the Corn Podcast. Remember, the best way to support the show is share it with a friend. But if you are craving more of the J-Clones
and more from Mr. E,
there's always extra content on Patreon
and our paid member space on cryptidsofthecorn.com.
We'll catch you next time with more exciting, fun, and informative information.
Bye!
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.